Shreyam Svadharmo Vigunaha
Paradharma Svanushtita
Paradharma Svanushtita
Svadharme Nidhanam Shreyaha
Svadharme Nidhanam Shreyaha
Paradharmo Vayavaha
Paradharmo Vayavaha Shreyam Svadharmaha Vigunaha Paradharmat Svanushtitat Svadharme Nidhanam Shreyaha Paradharmaha Vaya Avahaha. So, Shankara introduces this verse 30-35, really making kind of a bridge and taking Arjuna's situation into consideration. He says, raga dvesha prayuktaha, the person who's really impelled or engaged in raga dvesha, they're impelled by their raga dveshas. That's what causes them to act. And the binding desires, I want this so that I can be happy, I want that. So a person who's really under the influence of the raga dvesha, they can even think something like, they'll think, manyate, they'll think, you know, for the sake of the shastra, for the sake of the teaching, for the sake of the Upanishads, I'm going to do otherwise. I'm going to do something different, other than my own dharma, because I would like to, you know, thinking of the shastra, I would like to, I think, do it this way. Yeah. But in that thought, even using the, Shankara is saying, they'll even use the shastra as an excuse to not have to do your own dharma. Yeah. So he says, paradharmaha api dharmatvat anishteyaha eva ititat asat. He says, even the dharma of another person, even though being dharma, even though it is dharma, you know, the performance of that, you know, is asat. It's not right because it's not your dharma. It's a good dharma, but it belongs to somebody else, not to you. That's not what's being asked of in this given situation. Okay. So here, this verse, Krishna says, swadharmaha vigunaha. Your own dharma means what is your prarabdha karma, your lot in life, what is being enjoined on you to do, either ritually through the Vaidika dharmas or laukika. Laukika means what, in just in the world, belonging to the world, what is enjoined upon you to do in taking care of your family and taking care of your responsibilities. Those dharmas, which are your dharmas, even if they're vigunaha. Vigunaha means like they're not that great. They're not flashy in any way, you know, and they can also be kind of middling, kind of inferior. The things that I'm being asked to do, you can look at them as not being something that is bright and shiny and bringing a lot of praise and that type of thing. Or it can always also be just something that they use an example. I'm just going to give you this example. It's a kind of painful one for me to give, but they do use it in the shastra. Like say you come from a line of butchers. Your family are butchers. That's what they do. This is in India. And so say, then that would be really considered viguna. That's not looked upon as very, very, very well. Because it's a country of ahimsa, so many vegetarians there, so it's not looked upon very kindly. But you're born into that family. And that is your dharma. When you're growing up in that family, your dharma is to help your family, to help your father, this type of thing. So that is your dharma. You can't go over and hook up with another family. This is your family. And even though it may be viguna, maybe something that is not good in some ways. It's not looked on kindly. Even when it's viguna, that if it's your dharma, the dharma that you've been born into, that is shreyan. That shreya means, shreyas here means better, superior to paradharmat, the dharmas of someone else, somebody else's dharmas, somebody else's responsibilities. This swanutishtat means su anutishtat. Even when those dharmas are, you're performing them perfectly. Su means beautifully. You're performing the other person's dharmas so nicely, perfectly, but they're not your dharmas. That's not what's being enjoined upon you to do. So your own dharma, so doing your own dharma, which is, even if it's vigunaha, is better than doing the dharmas of somebody else that belong to somebody else. Dharmas means the niyata karmas, the karmas that are enjoined upon you, the things that the universe is asking you to do. And if you were to just kind of, well, I think I'd rather do these. I want to do these dharmas. I wanted to do the dharmas of this sannyasi over here. I don't want to fight this war. So this is where, so now he says, Krishna says, swadharme nitanam shreyaha. You know, it's staying in your own swadharma, being in your own dharma, nitanam, even if there is death in your, nitanam means death, mrityu. Even if there is death in your own dharma, which Arjuna is facing that. He's facing not only his own death, but the death of all of his family and all of his friends. So even if it would lead to death in the doing of your own dharma, that is shreyaha to the dharma, to doing the dharma of somebody else. He says, because the dharma of somebody else brings so much fear, because you're out of your prarabdha, you're out of what the universe is supporting and not doing, and also the duties that are being asked of you to do, you are veering off from those duties, the responsibilities that are yours. You know, you're leaving those, you're abandoning those, letting all of those people take care of themselves. You know, you have to fill in the gap somehow because you have run off to do the dharmas of somebody else. It's considered actually that type of, this is an interesting discussion in the Vedas. When you leave your dharma to do the dharma of somebody else, just because of fancy, or that looks much better, or that's something that I would really much rather be doing than being here with my responsibilities. And so I'm simply not doing them, okay? Not doing them. Another way of saying it, there is an absence of doing my dharma. But I'm not doing anything, and since there is no action there, there's no karma. I'm not committing a karma. It's the absence of karma. I'm simply not doing it. That itself cannot accrue papa. Because how am I accruing it? I'm not doing anything. Right? So can you accrue karma by not doing something? That's the big question. So they say no. In the Shankara and in the Advaita, in the Vedanta, we say no, you can't accrue karma for your absence of doing what needs to be done. But then they say, you are not choosing not to do what needs to be done, then what are you doing? You know? And so in the shirking of your responsibility, you're not accruing bad karma. But then the one who is shirking that responsibility, the shirker, is the person who's the shirker is doing something else. And so what is that? And that what you're doing has nothing to do with your karmas and what's being enjoined upon you. So you become kind of a little bit of a lost soul, because you're out of place away from your own karma, and that creates a lot of isolation and fear, and also not fitting in. You know, you're not fitting in because the duties that you're trying to take on don't really belong to you. You basically just don't fit in. I don't know if you've ever had that kind of an experience, where you've pushed against your prarabdha karma, you know, and you're in somebody else's realm. But that realm, that somebody else's realm, is not your realm. It's not where you belong. And so that creates a lot of feelings of of isolation, and I'm just out of step with myself. So Bhagavan says, you know, it's a mistake. And for another reason, it's a mistake. It's a double mistake. It's a twofold mistake now. The first mistake that we make, it all because of Ajnanam. We say it's a mistake, but it's the fault of Ajnanam, really. The first mistake, you know, is that I'm not doing what is asked of me in my situation. That's one mistake. And so in that way, I'm pushing against my own karma and what is actually what I have right now. The prarabdha of karma I have right now. But then within that prarabdha, if I have ajnanam, if I have self-ignorance, I am then engaged with, at least within my own karma, I'm engaged in raga-dvesha, means binding desires. And so the binding desires definitely don't work. They will only give me moments of happiness, but a lot of grief, because I can't twist the ananda out of them to the degree that I would like. So they're unstable. But at least I'm still held within my own dharma. And so that's a relief. So say this is not bad. This is what we're trying to figure out. What's the best situation for an Ajnani? Is to stay in my karma, with the life that Bhagavan has given me, the life that unfolds naturally for me, to stay, to do my dharma, and to pursue my raga dveshas, which are binding desires, because I'm an Ajnani, not a mumukshu. They're binding desires, but I'm pursuing them within my own dharma. And so following dharma, I pursue my raga dveshas. So that's also a great protection. It's not the best, because I'm still pursuing raga dvesha, but I'm pursuing raga dvesha within the container of my dharma, right? And so there's a huge protection in that. There's another little thing that's kind of, kind of understood by Hindus. And that is, the dharma itself protects you from dukkha. It protects you from pain. And the Lord Krishna, the Lord is called Janardana. That's one of his names. Bhagavan has many, many names. Krishna has many names. One is Janardana. The name Janardana means the one who brings about dukkha to those people who are following a dharma. The people who are not performing a dharma, Bhagavan punishes them. He's the punisher of the ones who follow a dharma. Now, that's not to think, because it being, you know, kind of from the West, Bhagavan's out there with a stick waiting for the adharmis, and there's one. Okay, there's another one. It's not like that. But the whole order of the universe, the structure of the universe, it's like the bones of the universe are all dharma adharma. So the whole universe is guided by dharma adharma. And so as long as I'm within dharma, there's a protection there. When I'm within adharma, the adharma attracts papa. The dharma attracts punya. And when we talk about adrishta karmas and drishta karmas, we learn to just understand this in reference to our drishta karmas. Drishta karmas again means the seen results of my actions. Remember karma. When you say the word karma, it often, depending on context, it often means karma pala, the result of the action. That, like somebody says, well, that's my karma. It means I'm experiencing the result of prior actions. It's my karma. That means karma pala. So drishta karmas are the karma palas which are seen, which I experience here and now. The adrishta karmas are the unseen results that I experience later, usually in another birth, but in another time period in this life itself. It means the result is not immediately seen. Those are adrishta. Those are called punya and papa. The punya and papa karmas are these adrishta. The papa punya karmas give me something that is conducive to ananda, to happiness, and the papa karmas give me results that are conducive to sorrow, to dukkha. Okay. So we look at Krishna or Ishvara as Janardana, means when I, in this creation, because of the laws of the creation, the whole structure of the creation, just the nature of Ishvara, when I go toward the adharmic behavior, I am experiencing drishtapala from that, the drishtakarmas, which is negative. If I'm doing an adharma in the world, I am really psychologically not rewarded by that behavior. That's drishta. Like say, for instance, just as an example, a drishtapala, immediate seeing result of if you do any type of unkind act, your immediate result is the experience of the unkindness. If you do an angry act, the immediate result is the experience of anger. You immediately receive what you sow, because you can't be angry at somebody without experiencing the anger. You cannot hate somebody without experiencing the hate. You can't be violent towards somebody without experiencing the violence. And so this is, in a sense, we start to learn that we reap what we sow immediately. It's not like, you know, I can hate you and not experience hate. It's not possible. And so we learn just from these experiences that, you know, in order not to experience these types of emotions, I also have to learn to refrain from giving them out. Because in the giving of them, I receive them. That's the thing. So many ways in life we're experiencing the results of our action, of our adharmas, of our ahimsa, you know. That's why, well, just even, we have to really, I'm going to try to resist this one, okay? I'm trying. So, Janardana, we learn from the drishtapala, the seen results. But there's a drishtapala also. And that's what, if you're a religious person, if you're a Hindu, you know very well about the drishtapala. And so you really want to avoid those things also. And so that would keep me in my dharma. That would keep me doing my duty, okay? Because I would worry about the drishta, you know, papa, that I would be, the drishta, sarduka, I would be experiencing, and the adrishta, papa, dukkha, that I would be experiencing. So that keeps me within my dharma. Now, Arjuna knows this. They all know this, okay? But Arjuna has now realized that he really wants to gain knowledge, and that this is a horrible situation. And I think that I should leave this rather than, he has an emotional reaction to his horrible situation. I think I should flee this whole thing. I should just leave it and go and take sannyasa. Go take sannyasa and run away from this situation, because it is going to destroy our whole kula, means our whole family. And so for the sake of knowledge, for the sake of the continuation of dharma, I am going to leave my dharma, right? And so Arjuna, that's why this verse is really for Arjuna, saying, even when your dharma and what you have to do is viguna, is terrifying, is horrible, you know, even then, and even if the doing your own dharma brings about your own death, it is far preferable, it is far better than taking on the dharma of somebody else, because those dharmas don't belong to you. And so you're not even, there's another thing that is here, you're not, your upadhi, this body, mind, sense organs that you have, who you are, the samskaras that you have brought into this life, and the samskaras you've picked up, they are absolutely perfect for your life. But they have nothing to do with somebody else's life. And so you fit in who you are, what your samskaras are, what your body is like, what your temperament is like, what your parents are like, where you grew up. All of these things are perfect. They're meant for you. They're part of you. The prarabdha karma is really an expression of yourself. It just extends beyond your body. And so you are completely qualified for this, You fit into it. It is yours. That's the other thing that people, I mean, in India, this is understood. This is yours. That's why Swamiji says, you have this. Be happy with what you have, because what you don't have is infinite. You know, just think about it. You have this. This is your prarabdha karma. Your body, mind, sense organs, all of your samskaras are meant for you to do this. This is what's unfolding for you. You have it. There is no problem, and it will unfold for you all the way till you die. And so an ajnani will say, yeah, but I'm not happy. I'm not happy, so how can I, why would I stay in this when I'm not happy? I want something else. So I want to go over to somebody else's. So this is Arjuna. I am really not happy in this situation. I want to go over and be like the sannyasis and just sit and meditate, and you can teach me, give me knowledge, and everything will be fine. That's what they would be thinking. But what Krishna begins telling Arjuna more and more, listen, you have no temperament for this. If you go and sit under the tree and try to meditate, you're just going to be meditating on all these people who have done this terrible adharma to you and ruined your whole kula, you know. You're not going to be very happy. You're not going to be able to, and so Krishna says, when they start making fun of you for running away and you're sitting there trying to meditate, when all of your friends have come and told you that they're all making fun of you and how weak you are and how they're so strong that you couldn't stand up to the challenge, and so you fled, how are you going to be with that? Are you going to say, no problem? Not possible. Yeah. So Arjuna had to be also convinced. There's so many things to understand. These things are simple things, really. But your raga dvesha, the problem is the raga dvesha are so strong. They're so strong that they can pull you away. And so that's why in the previous verse, Krishna says, you know, the raga dveshas are natural. They're just hanging out there with all of these sense objects. And you can't expect not to have them, because you have so many samskaras, so many things have arisen, you have all of these tendencies, all of these things that are coming out of your unconscious, you know. You don't choose your likes and dislikes. They basically choose you. You don't choose the raga dveshas. They choose you, you know. That's how it is. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But have they got you in their hands, or do you have them in your hands? If they are in your hands, because really they're just impulsive, not thought out desires. They're desires that arise. So do you agree with those desires or not? You have to have a choice. They have to be in your hands. If they don't and they're just dragging you around, it's like that chariot where the charioteer is completely drunk. They've let go of all of the reins. This is Swamiji how he tells this famous story. Let go in all of the reins. Their horses are just running wild, and the master of the chariot is sitting in the back, you know, with just total chaos, because nobody's holding the reins. That's the situation. We have to hold these reins. And even if you don't like your own dharma, even if it's hard, even if it's horrible, even if there's so much bloodshed, you don't like it. It's not has nothing to do with you liking it. It has to do with what is your responsibility in the situation. Sometimes we have to do things we don't like at all. We don't want to do them. We want to do something else. We really want to do something else. But I'm giving up my dharma and what needs to be done. And that won't feel right. That won't be good. And you always feel guilty. I didn't do what I was supposed to do, and I didn't know what I didn't do what was needed to be done. So he says, stick to your own dharma, even when it's very hard, even when it's horrific, like having to fight in a war to protect the dharma. So then he goes, then Arjuna has a question. Okay. So Arjuna Uvacha.
Arjuna
Uvacha.
Katam
Katam.
Atakena
prayuktoyam
pavancharati purushaha
Papam charati purushaha.
Anichannapi
varshneya.
Baladivani yojitaha.
Atta kena prayuktaha. Ayam papam charati purushaha. Anichan api varshneya. You see that double nada? Anichan api varshneya. Balat eva niyojitaha. So Arjuna says, having, you know, listened so carefully to Krishna, it's not that he's not following, he is following, but he's also has to be convinced of certain things, and he's also recognizing, as Krishna explains all of this, he's recognizing and probably has often recognized, how is it, you know, that I end up doing things I don't want to do. Doing bad things. Not even wanting to, how is that? So so Arjuna says, Atta means now he asks Atta. Then he says, like Atta is then. Now having said all, Krishna setting this, having said all this, Atta now, impelled yuktaha, impelled by what? Kena means by what? Impelled, you know, impelled by what? Ayam purushaha, this person, a person, charati papam, impelled by what? A person does papa, right? Anichan api, even though not wanting to. Where you make a choice, you make a choice to do papa, a person does papa, even when they themselves really don't want to do that. Balat he varshneya, balat eva niyojitaha, as though impelled by some force, eva means as though impelled by some force inside of me, how is it that I do things that I shouldn't do, you know? And let's see if that's in this, let me see. Duryodhana is, I don't see it here, I think it's in Swamiji's book or another one. Duryodhana asked the same thing, but what Duryodhana said to Krishna, I know very well what is dharma and what is adharma. I'm clear on that, you know? But knowing what is dharma, I do adharma, you know? Knowing that it is wrong, I do a dharma. But it's not that I'm not clear. I know what is dharma and I know what is a dharma. But still, I choose to do a dharma. Why is that, Krishna? Why is that? Yeah. Yes, and it's a beautiful verse. I was hoping it was in here. Maybe I'll find it and I'll bring it in because it's very applicable here. So anyway, so now Arjuna is asking the same thing, you know? What impels a person to do something, you know, that's a papa, to do a papa, even when they don't want to, as though you're being driven by some force inside. And so Shankara uses this Vritya, the servant example again. He says, goes like this. This is the Bhasha, it's just kind of nice. He says, for kena, hetu bhutena, by what cause, hetu means cause, by what cause, being prayuktaha, being impelled by what cause, rajna eva britya, like a servant, eva means like a servant by a king, I'm impelled, like ordered by force, you know, to do this karma. How can I be ordered by force? Who's the king here? Who's the one that's ordering me, and why am I following it? That's the idea. What is happening there? And so let's do the next verse. It's just his question.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Kama Esha Krodha Eshaha. Kama Esha Krodha Eshaha. Rajoguna Samudbhavaha.
Rajo guna samudbhavaha
Mahashano maha papma
Mahashano maha papma
Vidyena
miha vairinam Kamaha eshaha Krodhaha eshaha Rajo guna samudbhavaha Mahashanaha mahapapma Viddi enam iha vairinam. So Shankara introduces this verse saying, he says, may you listen to that evil, that enemy, Vairi, to that, may I tell you about that Krishna says, may I tell you about that enemy who is Sarva Anarthakaram, the one who is the cause of all evil, Sarva Anarthakaram, that which you're asking me about, may you listen to that one who is really the evildoer, the cause for all of the anarthas, all of the calamities, all of the evil, all of the hardships that take place in the world. Now let me tell you what that is. So then Bhagavan says, Bhagavan Vacha, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha. This is Kama, this Vairi, this enemy. It is Kama, it is Krodha. Esha Kama, Esha Krodha. This is Kama, this is Krodha. Kama means desire, Raga Dvesha, binding desires. Krodha is the anger that desire transforms into when the desire is thwarted. When desire is thwarted, the result is anger. Kama itself transforms into krodha, anger. And this kama is rajo guna samudbhavaha. It is something which is born of the kama. There's two ways to take this in the bhasha. The kama itself is born of the raja guna, sattva, rajas, and tamas. So rajas is what gives energy. So there's two ways of taking it, that a desire itself is rooted in rajas, right? Because with desire, there's a want, right? So that is like the seed of rajas is in that want. Another way of looking at it is that when a desire arises in the mind, it incites the rajoguna. Because it impels, the kama impels you to act, right? If you have a desire for something, that's what impels your action. And so you can either take it that the kama that arises is itself born of rajas, and that kama itself is going to propel you into action, or that the kama arises, and as it arises, it tickles rajas. It incites rajas that allows it, that makes you move, that makes you go toward whatever the raga, the object of the raga is. So he says, this kama, the krodha, born of the rajoguna, samudbhavaha means that it's born of the guna of which is rajas. He says, it is this that is viddi enam hi vairinam. May you know that this is this here in samsara, in this world that we find ourselves in, this is the enemy. It's the enemy. He says, it is, what is it like, this kama krodha? It is, first of all, it's mahashanaha. It's voracious. It's a voracious eater. It never stops eating. It's a glutton. He says that kama, when mahashana means it's glutton. You know, glutton, it's somebody just eats and eats and eats and eats and eats and eats. They don't stop eating. That's a glutton. So the mahashana, he's a great eater. Right? He's a voracious person, never stops eating. The word for kama, that we use for kama, I think I mentioned this the other day, is anala. Analaha, anala means, we say the fire is anala. It's a word for fire. It never stops eating the fuel. You know, in fact, it's never satisfied. Alam means enough. Analam, never enough. So with fire, you just have to keep throwing in the fuel endlessly. Never gets tired of it. Just have to keep going and going. You know, Karma is like that. You think that you can fill up the desire. You have a desire. So, you know, let's feed that desire with the desired object. And then the desire should then be fulfilled. But no, we feel the desire, we complete the desire, and it is only satiated like fire for a short period of time, and then it needs to be fed again. And then it needs to be fed again. So kamaha is anulaha. It's a glutton. Glutton means it will never be, you can never fill it up enough. It always wants more food. And it is, he says, it's not only a glutton, it's maha papma. It is the great sinner. It's the great poppy. Without kama, remember, we're not talking, when we get into the whole idea of non-binding desires, that's the idea for a mumukshu. That's for somebody who is gaining self-knowledge. A desire is non-binding only when I understand that the ananda that I'm seeking to gain from that desire doesn't really exist, that that's a projection, that I'm the source of the ananda. If I really believe that the ananda is given to me by that fulfillment of that desire, that's a binding desire. It's a belief. It's not kind of a binding desire. It's a binding desire because for me, I have no idea that the ananda is my own nature projected onto that. I think that is the reality. To understand kind of the seriousness of this situation is when you understand when you're projecting the ananda onto an object, there is a self experience. The experience is one of self-loss at that time. Because I'm seeing myself away from me, and I need to get that back in order to be full. It's like I am running after my own fullness, and my mind, by doing that type of extroversion, is creating a situation, a vritti, which is enjoying a lot of stress and pressure, you know, and so that stress and pressure is competing with my own nature. So the one who is ananda, who is so simple and beautiful, is the very conscious being that I am, that is so full and of myself, is just nicely illumining this deep pressure and longing. And so what is called to my attention is not at all myself, because myself is not even known. Myself is totally taken to be the one who has the deep pressure and longing. And now I have to relieve that deep pressure and longing by fulfilling my desire. And along the way, there's all of these problems that come up, all of the obstacles that come up. And so the binding desire is actually something really, really strong, strong enough to knock off dharma. In other words, it becomes stronger than dharma for me, than appropriate action or ahimsa. Or what I'm really being called to do in a situation. There's no competition because I'm not projecting myself onto dharma. I'm projecting myself onto the object of raga. And so the object, I win. For a jnani, or for a mumukshu, or for a dharmanishta, somebody who's matured, the value for dharma is stronger than the value for the raga. You know why? Because the ananda is more. That's why. If the ananda is more, because there's still ajnanam. If the ananda is more for the satisfaction of the desire than it is for the dharma, then I will choose the raga normally, unless I have a lot of strength. But the thing is that we discover over and over again as we perform dharma the beautiful rewards of it. You know, it's much more subtle, it's much more long-lasting, there's much more joy, there's much more love in it. And so I feel much greater, subtler, more beautiful type of happiness, and the response it brings from the world is also much, much more beautiful. So there's kind of a, when I do dharma, I feel in harmony with Bhagawan, I feel in harmony with the universe, I feel with harmony with others, even if I'm not a mumukshu. That's the tremendous power of dharma. So as we become more addicted to dharma than to the raga dvesha, because I feel more at home and more connected with the universe, But if my buddhi or if my pravritti is very much toward the raga, and the desire is very, very strong, then still no problem until it's thwarted. Now this is another thing. This thwarting of a raga, of a desire, it happens in many, many different ways. And this is what causes so much friction and so much bad feeling in any community. Because this is how it goes. It's one thing to go toward a desired object and get it in the end. I get it, I'm successful. Okay. But on the way to getting it, there are a lot of obstructions that come and get in my way. It could be a person who wants the same object, you know, is competing with me for that, or there can be jealousy involved in trying to knock me off from getting that object, or that object itself could be just taken by somebody else, or there could be all kinds of politics around my successfully getting this thing that I want. It goes on and on and on. And to whatever degree, whenever there's some sort of an obstruction, there is krodha. There's just to be a little obstruction, just a little one, there's a little bit of krodha. To the degree that there's a big obstruction, there's a lot of anger. And anger means all different kinds of things. It means the whole negative spectrum. There's anger, there's hatred, there's bitterness, there's rage, you know. There's irritation. All of these things, the negative spectrum is continually being, our mind is continually having to deal with it. The negative response to a thwarted desire. So don't think that a thwarted desire is just thwarted once. Even thwart means I have this desired object that I'm working for, I have to get it. On the way to getting it, it's not as though the universe becomes, okay, let's help Radha get hurt. You know, let's have everybody help. Everybody help. You know, she deserves to have that object after all. Let's all help her get that. It's not like that at all. You know, on the way, there's all kinds of this obstruction and this little obstruction, this little obstruction, and every little obstruction and big obstruction is irritating because it's thwarting the kama. Any thwarting of the kama is an irritation, either from a little irritation that I can kind of brush off to a bigger irritation, to a really big irritation, to rage, to hatred. It's all only because of kama. And then say you don't get it, then that's a big giant kama. I mean, big giant krodha, you know, disappointment in the whole negative spectrum. But the thing to realize is all the way along the way, there's little ones, you know, because I want something so that I can be happy, you know. When I want something so that I can be happy, the rest of the world kind of disappears. It loses its focus. Except for the people that are helping me get that and the people who are not helping me get it. It's not I'm just being here with Ishwara, you know. Happily being with Ishwara. Because the kama cuts through that, you know. And so when we look at the power of kama, it's not just that I have this one episode of it being thwarted, you know, and then I have one episode of krodha. I have levels of agitation all along the way as all kinds of threats, little, even if it's not something that's really happening in my mind, it's happening. That there's an obstruction happening in my mind. I imagine it. Agitation. And so that's why what he says, so Arjuna, you know, wants to know, you know, what is this force that's coming in, you know, and causing? He says, what's impelling me? What force is it that's coming in and making me act this way? Well, it's not exactly a force that's coming in from outside, you know. It's the kama itself that rises up, that desire, that binding desire that rises up, that is responsible for this whole thing. And it is that kama, those thwarted desires, that caused me to do, is the maha papa, the Papma. It is the enemy. It is the one that is creating all of the papa karmas, where I do a dharma or I do some sort of ahimsa or I hurt you in some way or another. It all has its roots in that kama. And so may you know this kama to be the enemy. Nothing else. There is really no other enemy. How profound that is, you know, you have to kind of think about it, because it seems simplistic, but it really isn't. Even when we do this inner child work, a lot of the work that we've been doing has to do with tracing back that raga, you know, the raga which can become a dvesha, right? That's thwarted. Thwarted raga, thwarted desire, I need this to be happy, becomes a dvesha. It converts itself into a hatred, you know. You don't have any hatred for anything if there's no kama involved. The kama has to be involved there. And so what we have to do, we have to keep following back our, first recognizing these raga dveshas. We have to recognize them and put appropriate labels on them. See how they operate. See what they're doing to me. What it is that I really wanted, what it is that was thwarted, to understand that whole mechanism that has kind of captured me. And then you can look, how can I see that whole thing differently? How can I transform that whole thing which is actually holding me inside? What can I do differently? And I can change my whole attitude. I can bring in my self-knowledge. I can talk to the little ones inside. I can transform it. But that's what I have to do. Otherwise, it's running its tape. It's running a tape. You know, it's a thwarted desire. My happiness was taken away from me, and I have hatred because of it. You took away my happiness from me. You hurt me. You ruined my life because you took my happiness away from me. You know? And I hate you for it. All this kind of stuff is going on whenever there's a big one. That's a big one, of course. But what is the root of it? You know. And then how does my knowledge fit into all of that? So when you bring your knowledge back in, you have to talk to the little ones inside, and you have to talk to yourself to see what is the cause-effect, what's the whole thing. Just trace it back, and see what you can do. You know, another way of looking at it, another way of being, you know. You really need that person. They're wonderful questions, you know. Do I really even want that person? Do I really need that person? What is it that I really want? Do I really want to be with somebody who doesn't want to be with me? I mean, you just have to bring it back and do it, really work with yourself on it, and don't let it just be this automatic mahapapa, you know, this mahashana. You have to resolve it into your own. Into your own being, you know, and let these things go. Because they just eat, the kama eats you alive. It's a mahashana. It's a glutton. It'll never stop, you know. For a jnani, it's different. Because we all understand all of those dynamics. If you read, when we get to it, a couple of years, to chapter 17 and go through this kama krodha, for the asuras and the rakshasas, you start to understand how far a person is able to go. Once they leave dharma behind, then it's all just about me and what I need and what has been done to me, what is hurting me. These people spoke out against me. It's all about me, me, me. These people need to be, I need to get rid of these people. They spoke out against me. They're hurting me. They're being rude to me. These people are stopping me from getting my desire or being successful in my business. Let's get rid of these people. It actually, that's what Krishna is saying in chapter 17. This is pure rakshasa mentality, you know. And it all is situated on kama, on binding desire. It's very interesting. That's good enough, I think.
Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.